Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
Fonte, come back.
Suprema.
Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
I don't want to alarm.
Yeah.
Or cause hysteria.
Yeah.
But all the great talents.
Yeah.
Were born Aquarius.
Roll call. Yeah.
Suprema. I forgot about you,
Supreme roll call. Supreme roll call.
My name is Sugar.
Yeah.
I love McCoy Tyner.
Yeah.
And any rapper.
Yeah.
From North Carolina.
Roll call. Suprema.
That's fine too.
Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
It's like
yeah.
And blacker than me.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody.
Yeah.
Well, it may be Rhapsody.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
They call me rap.
Yeah.
I'm on this show.
Yeah.
Freestyle off the top.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
Roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call. Suprema. Suprema roll call.
See, that is fire.
You did it. All right. You did it.
Got a little sexy on the end.
Yeah.
So that's cute.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the nerdiest rabbit hole in informative program ever created for music. This is Questlove Supreme. I am Questlove and I be 6'3". Shout out to my Team Supreme crew, Sugar Steve, who I think is, what, 5'10"?
5'10",
5'11".
Yeah. Exactly. Well, it depends what part of me you're talking about.
You'd be
5'11". Oh, wow.
HR. Anyway, and shout out to Laia.
What is it? 5 what?
Uh-oh.
You about 5'8".
That's right. All right. That's good, Questlove.
Oh, I was going to say you more like 6 feet when you rock the stilettos when Leonard Kravitz is in proximity of you.
Are you going to go my way?
Depending. Anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today should pretty much have music fans and real hip-hop heads mad excited. Hailing from North Cackalack, she made her professional debut on Ninth Wonder's Dream Merchant Project way back in like 2007.
That's
like
a mad time.
Ever. As a member of the Coolie High Collective and also releasing, I can't forget, Buzzworthy mixtapes, she's pretty much been bubbling under. Releasing The Idea Beautiful in 2012, getting notable co-signs from like Mac Miller, BJ's Chicago Kid, Childish Gambino. Of course, 2017's Laia's Wisdom. Layla's Wisdom.
Layla's Wisdom.
Layla's, I'm sorry.
Laia's a derivative.
All right. I saw the name and just started saying your name, Laia. Layla's Wisdom, with spots from K-Dot and Anderson .Paak and someone else named Black Thought, whoever that is. The new Roc Nation signee got her first round of Grammy nominations. And, of course, we cannot forget 2019's Eve with an astounding Metacritic score of 90. Let me just let you know.
It was a Metacritic.
Metacritic is kind of like, it's an aggregate. It's like Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
So a combination of everyone who's reviewed your product. You get basically a score. So to get 90 is, that's some acclaimed ass shit. Like, you know, I pray just to get 80s, like 75 to 80. She's getting straight A's.
Is that what you got? Okay.
She's getting straight A's over here, you know. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Questlove Supreme, the one and only Rhapsody.
What's up? I'm happy to be here.
You can clap for yourself too, because I want to hear.
Yeah.
I want them
bangles.
To hear you.
Rhapsody and the Bangles. I be 5'3".
Right.
They,
I see.
They running 6 deep.
You shining. You jingling.
A.K.A. the jingling, Gold baby. Coast.
Straight up. From the fingers to the neck. You know what it is.
You were telling us where your shine came from.
Oh, yeah. I got some.
You know what? I like the return. I feel like it's going to be a righteous return to gold.
Yeah.
That's something that I was not able to experience as a kid. I was in the plastic phase of like.
Medallion, you had African medallion. You
know? Oh, no, yeah, I the stopwatch.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't allowed to have anything, but I had the stopwatch because I grew up in the era of where they would snatch your snatch everything. Your sneakers. I couldn't wear Jordans. Nothing hip hoppy. No Kangol. No nothing. So
that's real.
But I could get a stopwatch.
Yo, nobody didn't want that.
So sure. Where did you?
I've always liked gold. I mean, I went through the Wood Medallion stage. I went through that, you know, yeah. Zulu Nation, mm-hmm. African Pendant. But I've always been a fan of gold. I just actually left Roc Nation, and one of the security guards was like, the history behind gold in Egypt was that the kings who loved their wives would adorn them in all this gold. So you always see the women wearing mad gold.
They dropping wisdom at Roc Nation of all
places? Yeah, straight
they
like
need,
that.
They need it
you
over
know
there.
What I'm so, saying?
That kind of wisdom.
My first time in Roc Nation, they just having dice games and...
It's a new dawn, a new day.
Oh, okay.
But I like your gold combo because it's like you got the bank on the chest, but then you was telling me you got the thrift on the arms, but it's all shining at the same level of shinicity.
No, one of these chest joints is thrifty.
That what? What?
Just
so she got
right
Biggie,
here.
Y'all.
Don't
she
give
got
it away.
Nefertiti.
Don't give it away.
You right,
no, you
right.
Need. I mean,
as far as not you. Oh. She's saying thrifty. I'm like, no. As far as
hey,
we know,
I put it in the rap.
Real,
I could
yeah.
be a millionaire. I'ma always rock fake gold, okay. Straight like that. I'ma keep it funky with you.
There you go.
You know this Nefertiti might be real. This the Mary J. Blige and Simone collection.
So, there's yeah. a Mary J. Blige.
Mary J. Blige has a line?
Wait, say what now?
Yeah, she did a collaboration with LL's Cool J,
yes!
wife Simone.
Yes!
So this
Whoa,
is the Sister Love yeah. MJB collection. It's right here, the
I
Nefertiti.
I know they was making that kind of shit,
yeah,
though.
They got this, and they got the double Nefertiti earrings. I got those. They got that fire.
Googling.
Wait, she's literally Googling it. Wait, can we finish
up.
The episode
yeah,
first?
Yeah, yeah. What's
it called?
Sister Love MJB.
Why are you breaking out the credit card right now?
No, I wanted to give the sister some love.
Support black business.
Yeah.
We got that. All right, so where I start with every episode of Questlove Supreme, of which like I'm really interested in how your creativity has evolved throughout the years, I always start with the first question is, where were you born?
Oh, I was born in Wilson, North Carolina. It's a small city in the eastern part of North Carolina.
Okay.
But I grew up 30 minutes from there in Snow Hill, North Carolina, and that's an even smaller city, population 2,000. Like, that's where I was born, around a lot of woods and fields and, you know, going to the grocery store with no shoes on, like, playing with your cousins all day in the dirt, you know, in the
Are y'all
woods,
shooters out there? So
fishing.
That mean you were a shooter?
I shot a BB gun. That's about it. You know, I ain't do nothing more than that. But, yeah, that's how I grew up. I didn't go to my first hip-hop concert till maybe I was 13. Montel Jordan.
I
don't know. Does that count? That don't count, does it? So
who else
say,
was on the bill?
Yeah, I think that's a talk show.
He was the only rapper, bro.
No, that's Montel Williams.
Yeah, come on, cuz.
You
trying to play my face. This is how we do it.
It's funny. Yeah. All right, it's funny you mention that. So I have a friend who is celebrating like a milestone birthday. So he's trying to have like a 90s themed rap party and have like his rap favorites. And he's really into 90s R&B. And he wants to get the most bang for his buck.
Right.
The thing is that Montel, even though he's had other hits, mm-hmm. you know, This Is How We Do is kind of the black national anthem.
It is.
So to speak.
It is.
It's transformed too. It's like everybody's now.
But
right?
That's the thing. But the problem is I'm trying to push him to get, he could either get Montel Jordan or he could get Drew Hill.
Ooh.
And I told him for Drew Hill, you'll at least get four hits
at least,
plus the thong song.
At least, bro.
So
you might have to pay extra for that, but yeah.
Yeah, you got to.
Well, they're the same price.
So, yo, take the Drew Hill. What are we talking about?
So,
that's not even
tell
a question.
Me, butter love?
What?
I'm sorry. That's next.
Tell me somebody sleeping in my bed.
Yes.
And there's two.
Reese's Pieces. Smile like Reese's Pieces. Come on, girl. I don't forget what that's called.
Right, but
Rhapsody
at least
he's looking at me like, "What the fuck?"
With Drew Hill, you at least get four hits and the thong song.
Yes, yes.
Straight up.
And with Montel,
you just get that one,
you just
bro.
Get, this is how we do it.
Yeah.
Even though there's been other hits, you know, he's had other top 10 hits. I'm not trying.
And
to.
The talk show.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's Montel Williams.
And so,
Drew Hill.
Let's not totally rabbit hole off the the conversation. What I want to know is, okay, for us. Snotty Northerners,
right?
That only come on now. Let's
keep
it 100.
You feel that now?
We know Raleigh Durham. We know. Yeah. We know like four cities. No, my family's from Greensboro.
Yeah, y'all know Charlotte, Greensboro, Raleigh, probably
that's
three.
Right. Now all my family's from Greensboro, but that's all I know. And I know like in Greensboro, I'm not to talk to any woman because I've heard that at least one out of every four black women in that city is my cousin.
Oh, what? Where you were going?
Yeah, we don't want to get into the incense.
Yeah.
No.
Not at all. So, like, what major city are you? Was Snow? You said Snow Hill.
Snow Hill. You're not gonna know the closest. Raleigh. Raleigh is an hour away.
Really?
That's the one. That's maybe Fayetteville. Maybe, yeah, that's like an hour and a half where J. Cole's from.
So you're saying that it's more...
Sorry, but yeah.
So you're saying that the environment was more backwoodsy?
Yeah, definitely. Like the,
so is it closer to like Daughters of the Dust or like...
Oh, shit!
No! Wait.
It's like Little House on the Prairie.
I just want to know if Rhapsody knows the reference because that's dope. That was a dope reference.
Well, Daughters of the Dust... No, well, I'm just saying that in terms of... Okay, there's... When slavery...
Geechee and the Gullah. Is that where you're going?
Yeah, when slavery was ended, there's some freed Africans that decided to continue the tradition of their life as they knew it in Africa by living off in the far woods. Like, really, my peeps come from Mobile, Alabama, so they started Africatown and practiced Yoruba religion and all that stuff. But they did that also, the Geechees in North Carolina and whatnot.
The rice people.
So. Oh, I was trying
you know
to.
What I'm talking
Daughters of the Dust is a movie.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes. I do know the reference.
I felt like you
Nah,
would.
We ain't that deep, bro.
Okay.
Come on, cuz. Don't do me like that, cuz.
No.
Come on, look at me. Look how I'm dressed, baby. I ain't that far here.
Well, you said going to the corner store with no shoes on. I thought, oh.
I did. I mean, you know.
Maybe,
but they
you
had
know.
A corner store.
Got a corner shack.
Yeah. Okay. I see.
Yeah. You got to ask her about this second hip hop show.
Well, no, I'm gonna get to it.
She got
to
redeem herself.
Okay. How big was your household? Like, are you the only child, or did you have siblings?
I'm one of five, three older sisters, one younger brother. Me and my brother are a year apart. I'm the knee baby, which is next to last. That's some country shit.
Okay, never.
Yeah, knee baby. So I'm next to last. So yeah.
Well, that
two
makes sense.
Parent home, for sure.
Are you the overachiever of the family?
I think we all overachievers. I'm probably second in line though. The middle child, my sister Amanda, she was valedictorian, you know, she just did everything right. But I am the overachiever now.
Because I always feel like the middle child or the indistinguishable.
She's the last girl.
The Tito.
She's the last girl.
Yeah, I'm the last girl. But all of us did good. Like, I could say my parents did well.
Well,
yes,
okay.
They did.
Was your first musical memory that concert?
No.
What was your first musical memory?
My first musical memory was Michael Jackson.
Ooh,
you
okay.
know, that's tour. The... Oh, for like... Oh,
oh you mean
tour?
Just music, period.
Just,
no, music,
just
period. Period.
I'm
yeah,
getting
music
her childhood.
Period is Michael Jackson. So that's what had me hooked from the jump. Like Man in the Mirror, The Girl Is Mine, all of that. Like right. Me and my dad would sit up on like Saturday mornings and watch Video Soul, tape them on VHS, and you know, we watch them again during
watch
the week.
Them.
Yes, I do that. I watch Yo MTV Raps. Like those are my biggest memories. But it all started with like R&B and soul music. So Saturday mornings, cleaning up, you know how that does. My mom's playing Tina Turner, Patti LaBelle. My dad is a huge Luther Vandross fan.
Okay.
So I've heard every Luther Vandross song that there is known to man. But those are my first musical memories.
Do you remember the first album that you purchased?
That I purchased?
Not just had in the house, but the album that you wanted. What was the first album you purchased?
The first one I purchased was Aaliyah's first album.
Okay.
AJ Number to Number. The
right.
first album that I owned was Warren G's Regulate, but my aunt had to get it for me because of that sticker. My parents were not going for that. So I begged her. She got it for me. That was the first album that I had. But the one I bought was Aaliyah.
It's called Rap Contraband. When I was young, I couldn't have the first UTFO album. There wasn't even...
That's crazy, right?
Wait.
I'm sorry.
Here's the funny thing. The funny thing was there was no cursing on it. But on one of those, on Roxanne's version of Roxanne, which is like buried on side B, she said like one time, like, all you received was a kick in the ass. And then my dad like just took the tape out and destroyed the tape.
Automatic.
So,
yo, I got one of those. The tape got destroyed.
Which one?
It wasn't even like a bigger artist. It was like a local group that I got from fourth grade. And the
Who?
Hook was like a tisket, a tasket, a condiment, a basket. My mama came through that door so fast. Fourth grade.
Fourth grade.
Yo, it was a white tape with black letters. Boy, look, I ain't think I was, boy, I survived that day.
So was it a religious household or?
I grew up a Jehovah's Witness. So my mom was a Jehovah's Witness. My dad was non-denominational.
Still?
Still. Am I still? No, yeah. No. I'm inactive is what you call it.
Okay, okay.
I'm more spiritual than religious.
Okay.
That's
okay.
My line.
So yeah.
Wow. So, man. Mm-hmm. No. But that's always, I find it that those who are in the entertainment business that have to sort of pass through the portals of, especially with Jehovah's Witnesses.
It's a few of them though, right? Like, have you found like your brothers and sisters? Because Jill Scott used to be a...
Jill Scott?
Jill
Scott, Ja Rule, Soundwave with TDE.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, I know Michael Jackson started as a Jehovah's Witness.
That's true. Then Prince ended as a Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah.
That's ill.
We got some nice, folk in my circle, son. Wow. We need to come over to this side.
Wait, when was the last time you went to Kingdom Hall?
Come on, bro.
No. I'm only asking because
skirt past knees, everything full.
I've never spoken to someone about what goes on, so yeah, I know that most, like the black, of course, with black church experiences and Baptist churches, like was it more conservative in Kingdom Hall? Like were black Kingdom Halls?
It was honestly. It was like Bible school, like you have of the Watchtower and the Wakes when we come to your door or whatever. So a lot of times they'll give you Bible readings. You go home, you go through the Bible, find the verses. They give you the Watchtower. They'll have paragraphs that pertain to a certain topic, whether it's life after death or what do you do about blood transfusions. And you read through the paragraphs. At the end, they have questions. You go find the Bible verses that answer them. And the next day, they'll have a main person that's gives a talk, but they're like the preacher, but we call it giving a talk. And then the second hour, you answer the questions as a group.
That's it?
And then you sing hymns, yeah.
Oh, but no clapping.
Sing a song full of the hope and
lift every voice in song. Sing? Y'all saw that?
Wow. No, it goes up like
stuff like that.
You know, you just reminded me of when we did the Prince episode, his assistant has a really hilarious story of Prince dragged her to Kingdom Hall, and she was shocked that she thought it was going to be like a black Southern gospel hooting and hollering music thing. And the music was very proper, and and Prince was singing it, and she just couldn't. She was like, "Who are you? Like, what were you doing?" So you said that Montel was your first. How old were you when you went to this Montel Jordan concert?
I was in seventh grade. So that it was Montel Jordan and Boys to Men. Ooh. That was the first concert I went to. That's the first real hip-hop concert I went to.
Yeah.
I was in college.
Okay.
I don't remember. It might have been Common. Common was, something like that.
Where did you go to college?
North Carolina State University in Raleigh. Yeah,
that's kind of the...
Yeah.
I'll say that on the East Coast, at least down south at least, like North Carolina was definitely a Common... No pun intended.
Central
and stuff. Yeah, there's at least five or six college stops that you can make down. Oh, wait, I'm about to tell you a story. Like, there's one time when I met Ninth Wonder and this band. I forget their name. Oh, Little Brother. Yeah, I forgot.
Do you know that story?
I have heard that story. Yes.
Yep. Thank God for that rainstorm. The show was outdoors, so it was like an electric storm. So we only did like one song. And I felt bad for everyone that like stood out there to watch it. So like,
yo, who was Carolina hip hop before Little Brother?
Before Little Brother,
Who was North Petey Carolina?
Pablo.
But even then, that's just it. Like, were there any? To your knowledge, was there anyone? It's weird that you're asking that because I know that in 97, 98, there was a major migration of New York rappers.
Right, the old school rappers. Yeah.
That moved down there. I know that Special HBCUs, Ed Special Ed was early. Big Daddy Kane was early. Mm-hmm. And they were telling us, back then, like, yo, y'all better hurry down and get some property before gentrification. Like, you could you could buy, like, a 12-room mansion with, like, marble floors. Like, you could get some Scarface property. Yeah.
Maybe like $600,000.
Yeah, like cheap to them.
Easy.
You know,
mad land.
Is it that way now, or has gentrification caught up in?
I mean, it's still pretty affordable. We're growing like rapidly, so downtown it might get a little pricey, but compared to up here, it's still cheap.
Now, what city do you live in now?
I live in Raleigh now.
Okay.
Yeah. So are you?
And you consider that home? That's where you would like to
stay?
No.
I wanted to say, is that where you want to die?
Oh, shit.
Well, no. I mean, like.
But that's where you want to
retire. Settle down.
Yeah.
Settle down is a better word.
Settle down.
I would like to settle down in North Carolina, but I definitely want to move. I've been there my whole life. Like, I want to live in New York. I want to experience L.A. Like, maybe go to Africa for a little bit. Who knows, you know?
You haven't done it yet?
I've been to South Africa. If I could take all my family there, I'd move there.
You seem like the type that would circle back and reinvest in whatever Carolina has going on.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. That's home always, so. You got to reinvest at home.
What was your come to Jesus moment as far as knowing that you had something as far as a love for hip-hop culture, like, this is what I want to do?
Oh, I feel like that was early, like I was around 10 or 11. Like, I fell in love with it when I saw MC Light's Poor Georgie video. So that's the first time, like, I saw a female doing it. And it's just like, yo.
That video was cool.
Yeah, that song and the video.
It's dope.
She looked cool. She
their version of Millie Rockin'.
So that was the first time I was like, wow, what is this? And then, you know, you get more into it, you know, listening to Warren G, like I said, Aaliyah's hip-hop flavor, her style, Queen Latifah. Then, you know, I listened to Jay's Reasonable Doubt, but it was Lauryn Hill that really locked me in. I saw the Fugees, the score. I knew what I wanted to do then.
I saw that you said, it's funny, I always want to ask people, because you said that the score was your shit. But nobody ever says anything about Blunted.
But Vocab, the remix,
that's
I rock
hello?
With.
Hello? Okay.
Here's
it a little
that,
fun,
but that's
fun
only
fact. One. I've heard Blunted on Reality in its entirety.
Of course.
I couldn't get through
score,
it.
Score, not so much.
I ain't mad at you, though.
No. It wasn't. No. It
how
wasn't.
Many mics? Which one was that?
That's love.
All right, I'm going to tell you a little story,
okay?
You
know, they were nemesis in a way.
We weren't, all right, listen.
In the beginning, y'all were a little nemesis.
We weren't nemesis. All right, here's the deal. Yes, there was, now that I'm older and wiser, I know not to react off of ninth-hand information, okay?
This is a lesson, kids. Listen up.
And this is me closer to my 50s than, you know, this is, like that Dave Chappelle sketch where, like, you know, 23-year-old Mir is talking versus me now. It was just that, yes, I felt some sort of way.
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
Like, we were on tour together, and it was a dog-eat-dog territory, and they got out the gate first. The score came out in, like, February of 96.
Right.
And Illadelph Half-Life came out in September 96. So they got out the gate first, had three, you know, they sold 11 million by the time we came out. But
God dang.
I was a little salty.
He really, yeah.
I was salty that their show slowly started to morph into our show. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, when they first came out, it was about the ritual with the, you know, they were doing like voodoo rituals and all those things, you know, representing Haiti. Yeah, they were lighting candles and
there's something not really correct what he's saying, but it's okay.
What are you talking about?
You serious? I don't remember. I remember them rapping in Japanese.
No. Oh, dude.
Yeah, Wyclef used to.
I used to intern. So here's the deal. My last day interning at Rough House Records, which coincidentally was Santi Cole's first day. Santi was my replacement at Rough House as the intern. Mm-hmm. And upon leaving, Chris Schwartz pulled me aside and said, hey, I know you guys are having a signing party for you guys signing to Geffen Records. How many acts you having? We're like, well, we got Jay with the Damager. Gangstar is going to come and perform some local Philly acts. We're really full. But then I thought, he did give me that money for our first video. Why? What's up? And he says, yo, we got a group that's sort of like in the lane of you guys. And can they come and do like, you know, like two or three songs, whatever? And I was like, okay.
Killed that shit, didn't
I? I did it. Why do you want to add to this?
I'm sorry.
So here's the thing. They get to sound check. And the first thing I said was, now, let me just preface by saying that I was the family DVR. So it was my job. My uncles and my aunts and my mom and everyone really didn't know much about programming a VCR. Mm. And someone had to program all their stories. So every Friday, I had to come and reprogram the stuff so they could watch their stories during their week on VCR. So I was very familiar with all the CBS soap operas. So when she walked in...
Oh, yeah, As the World Turns.
I was like, yo!
Oh, yeah!
And whoever her character...
As the World Turns, yeah.
I said, oh, shit, you're from As the World Turns. And she looked at me like, if you say World Turns...
You bet not.
Like, I was calling her out. Like, I think she was expecting Sister Act 2. But I was like, yo,
oh,
from As the World Turns.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
And she was like, shh. Yeah. And looked at me like, don't you shit.
She was an orphan.
Like, I was like, I didn't realize that, like, oh, I'm about to blow your cover that you're a professional soap opera actress. And so, no, and we became cool. And we toured together. But the thing
and
was,
then,
when they first started, they were, like, lighting the stage with sages and you know. It
by the time
was,
they finished, Wyclef was playing the guitar, like.
I think what we showed them, was that, oh, you can sort of do like the karaoke hip hop tribute thing, which, you know, once we, they're like, oh
hip hop 101, the thing y'all used to
well,
do?
I mean, the thing was like, okay, third verse, we're going to rhyme over this KRS-One
right on.
Break. And the second verse, we're going to do a break over this Black Moon break. And that, and when we, you know, and then as they started touring, then it was like, then they caught, oh, why am I wasting. All right, no. Anyway, my
a little hip hop history for you, Rhapsody.
I needed to know why he didn't finish the whole score.
Now that's anyway, a rabbit hole.
Anyway, so my point is that I'll say that in 1996, it was tense. It was very tense. So it was hard for me to as a listener to listen to that particular album.
Do you find it interesting he still hasn't listened to it? I do, because it's 2019.
Yeah,
it's 19.
But here's the thing. So, it's so classic, you can't avoid it. Okay, it's almost like Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA. All but three songs are singles, so like I know it all.
Oh, that's a whole album? I just know that song.
No, but you've heard Dancing in the
Steve.
Dark,
yes.
And Cover Me,
yes.
And I'm on Fire,
yes.
And Glory Days, okay. And like it's damn near Thriller. Like, you know all the songs.
Okay.
Anyway, this is not about me.
Welcome to Questlove Supreme Rhapsody.
Anyway, so.
I'm shocked.
I will say.
Questlove.
It is.
No, well, at least I'm man
Get
enough to
no
admit
one.
It.
It is. That's a nice fact. That's a good Questlove fact.
At the
fact.
Time. No, but I know all the songs. Like, I would DJ, like.
The joints.
The zealots and cowboys.
I dare you to throw vocab in. Though. Next party, can we just get it?
I love vocab.
I know. I'm just saying. Nobody does blunt it. That was back to my original point.
Oh, yeah. No, no. But I was saying off that first record,
yeah.
I loved vocab. That was my joint. That was my joint. Anyway, so back to you,
So you like Lauryn Hill, huh?
Oh, I love Lauryn Hill.
I'm so trying to get back there, yeah.
Yeah.
She was a big influence.
So what was the community like? And the one question that I'm glad that you kind of what I call matrix dodge, is especially with people that are not that familiar with you. And they're asking you all the time, like, well, what's it like being a female in rap and, you know, in underground, da-da-da-da-da. But what was the environment? Because I'll be honest with you. By the time that, like, the turn of the millennium, by the end of the 90s into the early aughts, like, mm-hmm. I personally was rather shocked that there was a boom bap element or appreciation in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
which really shocked mm-hmm. me by when I listened to, you know, Little Brother's
yeah.
demo the first time. I was like, wait.
Where they from?
Yeah, exactly.
Same thing with Rhapsody, though. Same thing. I'm like, I don't even hear. Yeah.
Right. So for me, like, how did you avoid what we up north sort of associate most hip hop from down south? Which I guess you could say in the 90s, we thought that South was booty music, mm-hmm. or that's, you know, or the earliest stages of trap. Like, mm-hmm. how did you find a hip hop community that was, you know, about the aesthetics of what, quote, real hip-hoppers in New York strive to be?
Well, for one, I think people have a slight misconception. Like, if you look at North Carolina, we're more Middle East than Deep South. So we're
kind of,
you know, we're
lower D.C.
Yeah, oh. And we're probably one of the states that have the most HBCUs. So at the time, you got to understand, 95 runs straight through North Carolina. So you have a lot of artists or New Yorkers that are coming to come to school in North Carolina, and they're bringing the music with them. Mm-hmm. You have drug dealers coming through. They're bringing the music with them. So for us, it's like a melting pot, too. You got people from Atlanta coming. So, you know, not only that's how we got the music. Like, you know, there was so much northern influence where we live just from the colleges and people that came through. You know, that's a lot of what we listen to. So we listen to boom bap. We listen to a lot of New York music, but we all listen to Atlanta. We also listen. So when I think about North Carolina, it's just a melting pot. Like, you know, we didn't have like a true southern identity like a Texas, you know, but it's still car culture. So you got to ride to our music at the same time. So I think that's what it was where, you know, everybody I know, like we wore Tims, you know what I'm saying? Like they wore the headbands. They had some, you know, people from the South sometimes get the New York accent. Mm-hmm. Like that was heavy where I was from. Like my cousin used to call himself Nas because, you know, the music and everybody from the colleges that were in there were just heavily influenced on us. So.
Speaking of, I'm jumping way ahead, but you mentioned car culture and riding.
Indeed.
I'm just going to ask, in the video for Ibtihaj.
Yep.
Where did that car come from?
Oh, man, we made a call. Somebody brought that through. Like, that's a rental.
Oh,
day.
Damn it. Wait, for the really?
For the video, yeah.
Oh,
that
damn.
Green joint with the MCM inside.
Yes.
Yeah, Misa Hilton.
I'm about to say, yeah. Did Misa have something to do?
Misa definitely, she dripped the inside out MCM, wow. But somebody, they own the car that people use for videos, and they let us drip it out.
Okay, I thought that was your personal ride.
Nah, we ain't there yet. You know?
You will be there. Let's start with the affirmations.
Then,
yes.
Goals.
Yeah, we're going to speak
Not even
that.
Goals. Effects.
But when you get there, you probably won't want the car with MCM all up in it, though.
I don't know. That's kind of fire. What you
yes.
mean? Yeah, the MCM seats? Come on.
This is our lesson.
I can't give them too much shine.
Listen, this is the lesson that I want anyone listening to learn for 2020.
Come on.
That most of the times we come modest and humble, and we need to be more about I am as opposed to I am. Meaning. Own it. Instead of, you know, one of these days we'll get there. But
you know, this is funny because the three of us have that whole 24 hours between our birthdays. So I'm really taking this to heart because I know that's who you really are. And you're fighting that anyway, you know. And Rhapsody, you know, you're born today.
Wait, why am I fighting the day I was born?
No, fighting that. What you just said is a big deal for us.
Oh.
Like we usually, Aquarian sometimes can be like, I am. When we are dope as fuck. Instead of being like, I am.
Damn,
like, that's an Aquarian thing.
That's right. That's something I'm working on this year.
Me, this is what I'm feeling.
Operating
me
at
too.
Higher vibrations and
yes.
really owning and manifesting.
I am stoned right now.
You know what I'm saying?
Not I am stoned. I am
stoned right now.
I am stoned.
So, what was your major at NC State?
Accounting.
Yes!
Really? Wow. All right, you why got your math together.
Because, you know why? Because I was a mass comm major, and I always tell, like, the younger kids, when I said, when you go to school, like, intern with your passion, but have some kind of business major and learn all the information you need to know numbers-wise and formula-wise so you are a business. You need to know how to, you know, run it, so... That's
Indeed.
Why I said that.
Yeah, when I get my taxes done,
I know the
lingo,
yes.
whatever, but I wish I had done marketing. If I was going to do one, I wish I had done marketing. But I did it because I was good at numbers. My sister went to school for accounting. You know, growing up in the South, it's like, get a job, get married, and get a job like an accountant, a doctor. So I was like, I'm good with numbers. I'm going to do that. But I'm way more creative than I am with numbers. But I didn't figure out that that's not what I wanted to do until my junior year. Mm. And I was trying to transfer to NYU. Until I saw that out-of-state tuition.
That's what I'm talking.
So I chilled.
You too?
Oh, I relaxed. I
yeah.
sat real still on that one.
I tried to be a New York college student, and it wasn't. I wasn't too successful.
When you notice the difference between the HBCUs tuition and then the big school, you're like, oh, well, I'm going to just be over here at Morgan State then.
Right.
I don't know. Some of them HBC.
Now?
Spelman?
I was about to say, Spelman's pricey.
Well, Spelman's in the leader of the, yes.
Howard?
Spelman and Morehouse. I went to Clark, so I did
the middle.
So they
have no more of that. They have no more of that.
Yeah, indeed.
I was going to ask, Spelman doesn't have any more of that C word 100 $1 million donation.
Oh, I don't know what they did with that money. I don't even know if her, his wife's name is on the building anymore. You know what we talking about?
The C word.
We talking about Dr. Huxtable.
Yeah, we still have Dr. Huxtable.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That was
okay,
a good
okay.
one.
I made enough Cosby jokes over the years to start. Now you can't even say it.
It's like Dr. Huxtable.
Wow.
I didn't know what y'all was talking about.
I know you didn't.
What prompted the desire to go to New York? Like, what did you? So you're saying by your junior year, you wanted to get more serious about your music career and
definitely. I didn't know at the
was
time.
Was Cool EI at that point or?
We were just, it was more H2O, it was an organization before okay. it was a hip-hop group. So
explain what H2O is for
H2O our listeners. Was a hip-hop organization that we started on campus where we would throw like rap battles and free shows and, you know, we do fundraisers. We did one for J. Dilla's Lupus. So it was just something for us to infuse hip-hop on campus and you get to use all the campus, you know, speakers and all of that for free. So, you know, that's what it was. So, you know, anybody on campus, and we extended to the community could be a part of the organization. But, you know, there were five of us that just hung out more, did music together more, and we ended up becoming Cool EI.
Okay.
So that's what that's how that kind of...
So Cool EI is a collective as opposed to a group per se?
Yep.
Okay, a collective.
Yeah, a collective that came, yeah. Came
so how did you grab the attention of Ninth Wonder?
I had, at this time, it's a summer, and H2O, the organization, we're doing a mixtape. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we got people from the campus, people from the community. Everybody does something. On this particular mixtape, I wrote and recorded my first two songs. My best friend knew that, you know, I loved hip-hop and wanted to rap, so he was just like, yo, just do it for fun. Ain't nobody gonna judge you. So I do this, these two songs put on the mixtape, and another guy in the organization at the time is shadowing Knife. Like, he's learning how to do Fruity Loops and all this. So he's like, well, Knife, you know, I got this organization, all these kids. Do you mind coming to talk to us? Knife is like, yeah. So we go to, you know, this guy's, his name is Fullery, who's in Cooley High. We went to his house. It was probably like 15 to 20 of us. Knife comes. At the time, he plays us snippets of The Minstrel Show because it's not out yet.
Oh, wow.
I get to hear Genius. He's telling us about, you know, how he got with Jay and recorded Threat. Like, you know, we just, all these kids, it's like campfire. And, you know, because he's at the time for us, like the biggest thing from North Carolina outside of Petey Pablo. And after that, he listens to the mixtape top to bottom. And when it gets to my song, it just caught his ear automatic. He listened to it probably 10 times in a row.
What's the song?
Yeah, I listened to it. I was like, bro, I don't know what you heard, but it's called it's called The Life. Uh-huh. Yeah, The Life. And he was like, he looked at everybody, and at this time, like, we got people that are in groups that have been doing music for years, that are, you know, got shows, that are traveling, and he goes, "That's your star right there."
Oh,
I remember him speaking on you early. I mean, way before social media, like on OK Player and like other platforms.
Oh, yeah.
And just texting whatever, that he was like, yo, I found the one. I'm gonna like he was super early, you know, with planting the seeds with getting your name out there. But I mean, at the time, who were your idols, or at least the MCs that you kind of looked up to as far as like getting your style from? And
at that time, like, I went through different
phases. I don't
want
to ask like who are your top five rappers, but I mean, like, just
at that, like, I went through different phases of discovery just because of where I was from. Like, being in Snow Hill, it wasn't like, you know, like I said, you go to a lot of hip-hop shows and we had like a record store in the corner. I could just go get CDs. So a lot of like hip-hop artists I might have got laid on, like Black on Both Sides. I didn't hear till I got in college. Mm-hmm. You know, so at this time, my phase, Jay is still my favorite rapper, but now I'm getting really deep into Mos Def. Mm-hmm. And I'm listening to Common, Resurrection, so to Talib Kweli. Like, I'm really diving into their catalogs, and they're my biggest influences at this time. You know, though growing up, you know, and still Lauren, I listen to Lauren, Queen Latifah, Nas, Biggie, Jay, but at this time, I'm really getting into the raucous sound. Mm-hmm. So at that point, that's my biggest influence.
Okay.
Yeah.
With what Ninth Heard, like, how long was it until you two collaborated on his...
On Dream Merchant?
Yeah, his project.
This, At the time, he said that this was maybe like...
It was Dream Merchant Volume 2, right?
Volume 2,
yeah. Yeah, 2007. I remember that.
So I met him and he heard those two songs. It was like September, October of 2005. We did our first song together maybe like 5 or 6 months after that. Mm-hmm. Tab 1 and Coolie High hit Knife during Christmas one time. He's like, Knife, jokingly, throw us some beats. And he just IM'd him 3 beats, like Merry Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So those were the first songs that I got to rap over.
Okay.
Piece of his. Then the next song where, you know, he was like, come to the studio. Like, he always kind of took us under his wing. It'd just be random. Like, I would be at work at Foot Action, and I get a text like, yo, Knife told us to pull up at the studio, just out the blue. So I'm like, boss, I got to go. I was like, I got to go. And they were like so cool and supportive of
Had
that.
They heard you before?
They knew what I was a good worker. I was so
That's
good.
That's weird. Cause
they couldn't even front.
Like, wait, not to interrupt you. You remember Jerrod Carmichael's story about Foot Action?
Yeah, he
was completely
Foot,
the
right.
opposite. Yeah. And from North Carolina.
Yeah.
His people were not too
they didn't see his potential.
Accommodating.
I guess he wasn't
right.
I was expecting your story to go a whole nother way. Was Return of the B-Girl your first solo
project?
Okay.
December, January 2010.
Okay.
Yep.
So how long did that take to formulate and put together and execute?
Let me see. I signed with Knife in 2008, 2009, and I worked and worked. So we probably worked. I just was recording songs. I don't think it was like I'm doing a project. I was just recording songs, and I probably recorded songs for 2 years. So we worked on it for 2 years, just trying to get my cadence. I still had so much to learn. Like, I go back, like, tone of my voice, inflections, keeping a consistent cadence, or knowing when to switch it in the right spot.
How is he as a coach?
Great. Like, Knife, people got to understand, before Knife wanted to be a producer, he wanted to be a teacher. So he's automatically just
still
super,
is.
Super patient. So he was super patient with me. I would get more frustrated with myself than he would.
Right.
So he's a great teacher. Like, the way he explained things and broke things down and, you know, allowed you, you know, to figure it out too. Like, I didn't have to be perfect, but he saw enough growth. Was like, okay, we could put out your first mixtape and just keep building on it. Like, great teacher. Phenomenal.
Did you get to be in the studio and make some of these songs with folks in the studio? Was everybody like sending?
Oh no, you got to understand, like, when Knife creates, mm-hmm. he likes people and okay. energy around him. So, and at the time, the studio is on North Carolina Central's campus, so it's open Ooh. Doors. So you might walk in some days, it might be 20, 30 people in there. And so, like, it was so much pressure for me because I'm the opposite. When I create, you know, now I'm more comfortable. I could write around anybody. Mm-hmm. But at that time, like, trying to figure it out and not being confident, you step in the booth and it's 20 people looking at you, like, what you about to do? And then, you know, you doing it and it ain't all the way right. So he keeps stopping you, trying to coach you. And it's just like, I'm going about to go crazy.
And you so. Got folks like Rod Digger. Like, you got to be in the studio with Rod Digger, like Matt Miller.
Yeah,
like
Rod Digger, Gene Gray came and worked on, I think they were trying to work on Phoenix at the time. I was there when Wale and Knife were working on Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. Big Sean came through. He and Knife were working on some joints.
What was it like working with Mac Miller? And
oh, that was dope. That was easy. That was fun. Mac pulled up. I don't even remember what year it was. Might have been like 2011. He was coming to see Knife or whatever. And just, you've met Mac before.
Yeah, I know.
Like, you know how open cool and chill his spirit is. So, you know, he heard like some songs. He was like, yo, you're dope. He was like, let's do some joints. Like, it's just that easy. Like, you know, so.
When you collaborate with artists, is it more just like send me a 16 or like, or do you work in real time with them sometimes? And
It's different. Earlier on, it was just like, yo, just send me some 16s. At the time, I'm just trying to prove I could rap. Okay. Now it's different. Like, for me to even reach out, I got to hear you on the song.
Focus,
like, it don't
direction.
Even matter
right.
what your celebrity is. If I don't hear you, like, it could be a new artist. If I hear their voice, oh, they be dope on this, and I'm calling you. So it's got to fit right. A lot of times, you know, I tell them what the concept is. But, you know, I don't like to box people in because I want people to be as creative as they want to be. So in the same way Kendrick called me and told me, like, yo, this song's about complexion.
Mm.
You know how it goes. Bet. Boom. then I'm not trying to pigeonhole you. So that's what it is for me. I like people to be able to create how they create. And if it needs tweaking, and we'll work on it. Or we'll just flip it and turn it into something else. Put a different beat on it and make it a new song. But that's how I create.
P.S. It's hard to say that's my favorite Rhapsody verse, but damn that verse. That complexion. Oh,
thank you.
Fucking awesome. Can I just ask one more question? Because you were talking about...
It's your show too.
Oh, thank you. I don't want to fast forward to Eve or anything, but I just want to fast forward for a minute on this subject, because on that subject, how do you propose to Queen Latifah, who doesn't do features like
Whoa,
that?
Whoa, time out. How'd you get that verse out?
Wait,
I don't even want to sell Dana. Never mind. No, I ain't trying to sell Dana short.
Okay.
I'm not. How'd you get that verse out?
But we just pulled up to a crib. We worked on a
verse.
That
was a stellar...
She killed that, didn't she?
Yes.
I wasn't expecting that. Yo, well, I thought, when I first heard it, I thought, okay, she's going to sing the hook or something.
A lot of people thought. Nah,
then when she started spinning, I was like, oh, wait, is Rhapsody changing up her flow? You know, because similar, like, we had a situation where Reek demoed Big Daddy Kane and Kool G Raps versus.
Yeah, I remember that.
And instead wound up doing it himself. So at first, I thought that's what you were headed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh shit, like Dana still has it.
I mean, when the last time we've heard a Queen Latifah feature?
That joint was super fire.
I didn't
realize how long. What was the process, or at least
please tell
the
story.
The process of because, no, this is what I'm asking. And I'm not even being snarky. All right, here's the reason for my asking. It's a lot of times when you ask for a favor or a verse, especially from someone of stature, depending on how they feel about you. And, you know, there's some people that, like, if Tariq asked them, you know, I'll say that 85% of the time someone's going to bring their A game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then there's sometimes when people just like maybe phone it in. And that we've had a few situations where the verse was phoned in.
Wow.
And it's like,
Tariq
had
to impersonate the person.
Well, no. But it was just like, which one of us is going to say, nah, can you do it again? Like, I feel bad when it's that situation where
you
have
to. To a legend.
And
so Rhapsody, how?
Yeah, like, was all right. This is all I'm gonna ask. This is a yes or no question.
I feel like we should stop.
No. This is yes. Was that her verse coming in the door, and that was it, and no more?
No, we.
Or was it worked on, and
it was. This is how it happened.
Yes,
she invited me to her house to work on the verse. I went into her home in the studio. We talked. We worked on the verse. And we got the song. That's all I'm saying. All right,
leave it alone. That's it.
That's fine. Okay. No. That's all I wanted to know. I wanted to know more or less like how many takes and how many redrafts and rewrites and that sort of thing.
Oh, it was one draft.
She came with it. Okay, can we ask about another hard to get person?
One draft.
Can we ask about D'Angelo Archer? Can we ask about D'Angelo?
How did y'all pull that? Wait, I'm going to tell y'all something. This motherfucker.
Finish something?
He started and finished something. Wait, I'm going to tell you something.
Come on with it.
Me and D.
I love him.
I just, all right, one day I decided to count the paces from my house to his house.
Uh-huh.
Currently now, me and D have been neighbors. Unbeknownst to me, I didn't know that we were neighbors for 5 years. And then.
Ow.
Yeah. We've been neighbors for 10 years. And one day I was like, wait, let me count. I have a doctor's appointment that's somewhere towards his crib.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'm literally going to count the paces. 76 steps.
Damn.
Yo, that's wild.
And an album and a song title. I don't know.
What?
76 steps.
Yeah. Oh.
76 steps, like, to D'Angelo.
Yo, we've lived 76 steps from each other for the last 10 years. And we ain't been to each other's crib yet.
That's crazy.
For the
That's
record.
Like 6 months in D'Angelo time. So, like, don't take offense.
Yo, I know.
Get this guy.
Yeah. He's only talking because he know.
Steve was, like, one of the many engineers on Voodoo. And a black, but say black excellence.
Black Messiah?
Black Messiah.
I didn't know you did Black Messiah.
So how...
You're so dope.
I didn't do it.
How did you get D'Angelo on the record?
Yo.
And he's doing a lot on the record. He's doing arrangements on the record. So it wasn't even like...
Oh, okay. Because I was listening like, okay.
I'm going to send just this hook
in. No, he went in.
So
like he's weaving, bobbing in and out, whatever.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Bruh, by the grace of God, the universe. Like
you don't even know it.
On
yes.
the real. It was it's all chain reaction. If we hadn't picked that sample, if GZA didn't want to get on it,
we don't
get D'Angelo. Like out the gate, I knew I wanted to do a Wu-Tang flip because of the Nicole Buss record that I love so much.
Yes.
So Knife was going through all the Wu-Tang sample banks and he ends up picking the Liquid Sword joint. So he's like, this the one. He sent it to me. He was like, what you think? I was like, let's run with it. So he's like, well, if we do it, we got to ask for GZA's blessing and ask him to get on it because it's his biggest record. Bet we do that. GZA says yes. So that's a feat in itself for GZA to even want to let us do it and be like, yeah, I'll get on it too. So we're in the studio mixing with Young Guru, like light mixing. And at the time, like the Wu documentary of Mics and Minutes is out. So they're touring. So we're trying to schedule like how we can get GZA in the studio to get this verse while he's touring, while I'm trying to meet deadlines. So he's talking to, you know, his man to handle that. But, you know, old boy on the other phone says, well, I'm also working with D'Angelo. And he happens to be big fans of both Ninth Wonder and Rhapsody. And I think it'd be dope if y'all work together. So it's just like, what you want? Like, I'm ready to do like a whole new joint. Like, I'm like, I could send him the whole album. Like, we could do some new stuff. I could send some beats, like whatever he wants. I said, he got some, he can send it. I could finish it, you know? And he was like, nah, I think the joint that you sent GZA, you know, would be dope. So we sent it to him. I'm flying all over the place, shooting videos, doing press, trying to get ready for the album. So he calls Ninth at the studio, and he and Ninth have a conversation. But, you know, he talks about how he's a fan, that, you know, how much Wu-Tang and the Liquid Sword song meant to him. Like, everybody has a memory attached to that song and how much he loves GZA because, you know, that was the first person from Wu that he worked with. So it's just all these factors. So, you know, he was like, I love the record. I love to do it. So, you know, we got him in the studio. You know, he likes to record on tape.
Mm-hmm.
We probably waited maybe like 2 weeks for it.
Yo, that's not a long record time.
I know. Like,
wait, you saying 2 weeks? That's like
two, maybe three at most. Like, but yeah, like he probably went in the studio every day for like 7 days. Even when
it was intricate.
We paid for the studio, but when like. We paid for a certain time, even when that was out, he was like, I'm not finished. I'll pay for the rest to finish it. I'm just like, yo, this is crazy.
I was wondering like, because, I was wondering if he did his thing on tape because all of his vocals are very speeded.
That's just impressive.
But yeah, he killed it.
He ain't featuring nowhere else either.
What did he do, background vocals? And you said he arranged?
Well, I mean,
he arranged the background.
But he doesn't do mere background vocals. No. It's just the
way he played with his voice. Like,
yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
And
it was majestic.
What was ill for me is I did like a mock hook before I knew he was going to be on it. Like, the placeholder. Mm-hmm. To hear him sing it, like,
blew your mind.
I was like, I thought he was gonna write something new. Like that in itself was ill to me. But
you know how to.
I mean, people. We look up to our D'Angelos and think that they, you know, that they're on another level. But they're still big time music fans, mm-hmm. you know, and they fall in love definitely. With something when they hear it, and mm-hmm. they don't need to change it. They just recreate it.
That's
you know,
a bar.
That's amazing. So I'm sort of skipping to your second album, mm-hmm. and so what was the process and the decision to roll with Roc Nation for your second album?
We knew that, you know, as an indie label, we can only do so much, like budget and marketing wise, and really getting the exposure that I wanted. So, you know, when we took the meeting with Rock, one, I'm a big Jay fan, mm-hmm. off gate, but walking into the building, and at the time Shaka Pilgrim was the president, and you walk in and 50% of the staff are women, and it's so many different cultures, and we came in with Layla's Wisdom probably 80% done, and they didn't ask us to change a single thing.
Wow.
Not one single thing.
I was gonna ask you that, because you...
It was always, all right, what do y'all want to do? What do you envision? Like, what are you thinking? The music, they never... Every eve, they didn't ask to change or touch anything. And so, to me, like, the energy and just how much they love the culture, it didn't seem like... I've been to Def Jam, I think, in Atlantic before, but this was different. This was all about culture and just music, and they were really about growing with me. Like, they wasn't pressured to have a radio single, or it was just like, you know, we believe in you and your talent. We just want to, how can we help? That's what it was. So that's why.
And how did you feel the morning that the nominations came out?
Yo. And I don't know.
What was that,
like,
feeling for you?
It's
like your first phone call.
Yo, 9th was the first one to hit me because I was in LA. So it was like 5 in the morning. So he hit me. He was like, yo, you nominated. Twice. So I was like, yo, what? Like, yo, to be nominated, but to even not be nominated twice, like, that was crazy. So for me, it was just like, people were calling me. I couldn't even answer the phone. I had to just sit back and reflect, like, yo, we're here. Like, this is a different bar. To be recognized at the highest level of music of an award show and to not have no Billboard hits and no platinum records and to be in a category with Jay-Z and Kendrick Lamar at the same time, it's just like, man, that's...
Not have to change nothing, not even have to put on a tight dress.
No. I cried a little bit, you know, but yeah, I was thankful that I stayed the course, if anything.
So I have to say that your whole process of crafting the Eve album, mm-hmm. is just some amazing ass shit, you know.
Thank you.
Like, where did the idea even come from for crafting this album? As an homage to the spirit of the black woman in America and the world and their effect. Like, where's the genesis and the seed born?
Last summer 2018, I was doing an interview for the Oxford, and this guy named Lamar Wilson, he was writing a piece on the lineage of Carolina musicians. Mm-hmm. And so he was connecting me with Nina Simone and Roberta Flack. I was just like, yo, I never thought of me connecting with them in that way, because we just seem like I put them up here like there's no way like we connected. But the way he broke it down, like, you're both soulful, you know, you're both lyrical, you know, you both reflect the times and talk about what's going on in the community, your storytellers. I was like, man, I never thought about it in that way. Like, I do come from their family tree. And it made me think, like, yo, when I do interviews and people say, who are you influenced by? Yeah, I say Queen Latifah, MC Light, Lauryn Hill, but I talk about Cicely Tyson. Mm-hmm. I talk about Nikki Giovanni, you know, Maya Angelou, and I'm just like, man, when I think about who I am and who I'm inspired by, of course you have your village, your mom, but there are so many black women that I look up to. And two, it gave me a way creatively to show that there are so many different sides of me too. You know, people like to say or kind of put me in a box sometimes based on the music that I make, that, you know, we were in a studio one time, and a dude was like, yo, we thought like a party for y'all is just like burning incense and y'all listening to Badu and all this. And I'm just like, bro, like, what are you talking about? Like, I grew up on Luke. I listened to Go-Go growing up. Like, I'm from Snow Hill, North Carolina. Like, that's the Sticks, like Boone's Farm. Like, we listen to everything. So there were so many sides of me. So it was like, this is a way where I could take a different woman to not only describe, like, my different personalities, but also talk about them and continue their legacies and say that we all come from a family tree. I think after I did that interview, like, I went home, and I'd always wanted to do a song about being a tomboy, especially in this day and age, and what that looks like. And I did it. And because of the way I started the song, when Aaliyah was alive, and I was like, I'm going to just call it Aaliyah. And as soon as I did that, it all just clicked.
Came together.
Yeah, the conversation, it's like, oh, I got this song, Aaliyah. I could do this with this. Felicia Rashad taught me about motherly love. Nikki Giovanni taught me the power of words and blackness. Like,
yeah.
And the videos. which yeah. I also feel are crucial components to
right.
the vision of the ad. Like, what were the concepts for the? Well, not the concepts, but yeah. you know, as far as like, I personally want you to make a video almost for every song.
I do too. Yeah. I do too. I'm trying to make it happen right now. We just did a Feeny.
Word?
Not too long ago.
Okay.
Yeah, we
okay.
did a Feeny. I still want to add to it. It ain't all the way right.
Wait, so far but, you got a Feeny. What videos do you have for which?
Well, Oprah.
Oprah, Eve Dahaj. A Feeny will be the third one. The next ones I probably want to do Cleo, Whoopi, Aaliyah, Serena. I want to do one for every song. Like, I see it.
So
everyone.
No problem putting this list together?
The list, putting the list
well,
together.
Well, now I'm curious about Eartha Kitt, because I heard you mention in an interview that you left Eartha Kitt. Was it just for spacing on the album, or just
spacing? The first draft, we had 23 songs. You know, we knew, like, it's too long, because people today can't digest music, you know.
The same way.
The same way. Like, they tap out. So at first, I was going to do a part one and a part two. So sonically, you know, we have this one, and the part two was going to be, it was going to be way more soulful and more boom bap heavy. Right. That was going to be like Felicia Rashad, DJ Spinderella. She has a song. Who am
so
I?
We are going to get a sequel.
Harriet.
I got different ideas. That's all I'm saying. Nice. There's more music coming.
I love you with the Sojourner route, and you said, I'm not going to do the Harriet. So I was like, maybe there's a...
Yeah, I was like, Harriet Sojourner. Which one do I name it? But yeah, so... But there's I did like 40 women.
As far as where you are right now, like, what do you feel that your goals are? Like, do you have a 5-year plan as far as like this point from now, like developing other acts, or like just make more music, or
definitely make more music? I think this is the foundation of everything, but I want to expand artistically, because, you know, the way I write, like, I want to get into not only writing songs, but I want to write films. I want to get behind the camera and produce documentaries. I was in the rock office with Tata today. He was like, rap. You need to write some R&B pop records. Like, you know, so, you know, I definitely want to try it. Like, I'm just like, let's try it and see what happens. Just do a lot of more things artistically. I thought about starting a label. I don't know how I feel about that yet. But Misa Hilton's son, Nico Brim, he's an MC. So I want to help. I'm helping executive produce his album. That'll be my first time, like, taking that role.
Okay.
But,
okay.
Yeah, just, like, really expand on that. But always putting out music.
Giving back to what was given to you. Completely. Okay, I see that. Well, you know, again, from the bottom of our hearts, we really thank you for your talent and your wisdom. And
all
your
that
gift.
Blackness, all that queenness. That's what I'm thinking. You can't really say that. I'm just speaking for the...
Yes, you can.
Okay. Just for the sisters. Thank you.
I can thank her for those things. Steve can thank her for that.
You can. You didn't. So
thank you. Blackness.
Yeah, and the queenness. See, we can say that too. Laia.
You can. You didn't. So I was just filling in the blank.
Jewishness.
Thank you.
Yes.
See, thank can you. We say that?
Have you been to Egypt? Because I'm
not
staring
yet.
At your Nefertiti
not
the whole
yet.
Time. Me neither. I'm trying to get there.
We should go together.
Yeah, wow.
Take a pill. Yeah.
There
yeah.
you go. I would pay to see the Sugar Steve.
The cultures together. I love
yes,
it.
I would pay to see that. Well, that is...
You'll actually pay for us to go?
Hey! Hey!
That's another episode of Quest Love Supreme, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you one more time, Rhapsody. Give it up,
thank
ladies and gentlemen. All right, on behalf of Laia and Steve and Boss Bill, and yes, even unpaid Bill and Fonticolo, who incidentally is still out getting cigarettes, and he said he'll be back home any moment. This is...
I need those cigarettes, so hurry up.
No, man, he said he was going to get some smokes, and he'll be back.
He might as well stop and get some weed then. Okay.
2 years ago, he was fixing his bathroom. Now it's getting some cigarettes. All right, this is Questlove, and we'll see you on the next go-round of Questlove Supreme. Thank you. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.